Good morning, everybody. And the intro to the show is actually correct this week. Fred is here this week. So if you've missed any of the shows like Fred did, they're available on the website, SolomonOnBlast.com. And if you want to participate in the show, you can call in. The number, as always, 520-750-7456. You're listening to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. Fred, it is good to see you back.
Good morning, Doug.
You've been around the world literally since the last time you were here.
Yeah, I've been in a few places. It's good to be back.
First a trip to Australia and then Mexico City, right?
Yep. I was actually there when it snowed.
In the middle of spring.
I don't think any of the 25 million people actually witnessed it, but that's what we hear.
Yeah, it was a big deal on the news. We always talk about the crazy culture we live in here in the U.S. and how there seems to be a lack of wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of Solomon. And human nature probably isn't any different in those other countries than what we see here, I'm sure.
Nothing new under the sun.
That's right. There's no shortcuts, I'm sure, when it comes to traveling those long distances. You're pretty much stuck with what the airlines provide as far as flight times and connections go. But it is human nature, though, to always try and find a shortcut, an easier way to do something. And sometimes that's good. We can produce a lot more food nowadays because somebody got tired of walking behind that ox pulling a plow. We can travel across the country easier because people like Henry Ford thought people would rather travel by a car or wagon, train. So it's not always a bad thing when people want to find easy ways around things. The real problem is when we try to find shortcuts toward changing human nature, as if we could really change it. And what's worse is when the starting point for trying to change human nature is not based on the truth. Solomon tells us in Proverbs that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom. But in our culture today, we think we can start by having secular laws that legislate people's behavior, or we can just have a national conversation that will fix the problem. And I want to know where that particular phrase came from, a national conversation, because in most cases, conversations don't amount to really changing anything. There has to be a desire, a debate that brings up solutions. Conversations may try and bring solutions, but usually they're pretty insignificant. So I want to know, why is it that it's always got to be a national conversation instead of a debate or a dialogue that we actually come to have a plan and a solution? And if we're honest with ourselves, human nature being what it is, we're all pretty selfish. Just consider the normal behavior of any baby. That's the norm, right? Is a very selfish, self-centered point of view. Feed me, hug me, hold me, you know, change my diapers. That's really where it boils down to. And Dennis Prager has a good quote that summarizes it. He says, if we weren't born with antisocial passions, narcissism, envy, lust, meanness, greed, hunger for power, just to name the more obvious, why the need for so many laws, whether religious or secular, that govern our behavior? And I think the problem is that people just won't grow up and change from that childish behavior or selfish behavior. And our culture thinks that it's society that produces the selfish people, not that it's inherent in our nature. And that all we have to do is create the right type of society, and there'll be no selfish people. If everybody believes in communism, then nobody's going to be selfish because everybody's equal. Solomon says that evil men do not understand justice, but he also says by the fear of the Lord that one departs from evil. So the real key is fearing the Lord in all of this, because once you start there, then you've got a basis for really making a change in human nature. We'll be right back with our first story here, Solomon on Blast. All right, we're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. In this first story, Proverbs says, "He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction." So the question is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar reference to Starbucks' plan for having their people talk to people about race a good idea, or is it just a lot of foolishness? In this article from Time Magazine, says Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Starbucks' flawed but wonderful plan to tackle the race issue. Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz had made a bold decision to encourage his baristas to discuss race relations with willing customers has filled me with shock and awe. This is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He says, I'm in awe of his courageous and good-hearted attempt to do something to bring about better awareness of racism. I'm in awe that he's willing to put morality above profits. I'm in awe he's willing to endure the snarky ridicule and lame coffee jokes from pundits, as well as the inevitable death threats from clueless trolls, all with nothing personally or corporately to gain and a lot to lose. He says, but while in awe of his chutzpah, I'm also in shock that he thinks this will actually work. Kareem says, it's abundantly clear there's a race perception problem in America, and despite killing of unarmed African-Americans, despite evisceration of the Voting Rights Act, despite Oklahoma frat boys singing about lynching blacks, the majority of white Americans don't think racism is a significant problem.
Well, first of all, Doug, I just want to say, you know, being a little kid watching him play, I've always respected Jabbar as really, you know, an intelligent guy that happened to be 7 foot two with the, you know, with an amazing skyhook. But fundamentally, I agree with what he's getting at, that this is a ridiculous plan. To ask your baristas who are otherwise working, I mean, these people are making coffee, they are cleaning out, you know, they're cleaning their utensils and whatnot, and at the same time carry on a serious conversation about race?
Right.
Can you carry on a serious conversation about anything?
I don't know. If they come in and they ask you, do you want your coffee black? And you say no, what is their response going to be? Oh, are you a racist?
Well,
so there's the pundits with the jokes about coffee.
More concerned about, you know, how
the quality of the service and the the product.
Whether your foam-free 2% latte is, 89 degrees or 100 degrees, you know, this is I think he's being way too nice to Howard Schultz.
I agree.
I think one of our assumptions about people who make a lot of money is that they're always right about everything, and no matter what they think about it, it's somehow there's brilliance behind it. But I think this is absolutely ridiculous, because basically not only do these people have work to do, then you have to give them almost a lifetime worth of study on the nuances of race relations. And then what if people challenge them? What if people scoff at them? What if people just simply reject what they're saying as trite and foolish? Then that employee's put in a place where they have to actually defend their position and debate and argue. I mean, it's a ridiculous scenario. I mean, I don't even know what – I think this guy needs to check his medication.
Well, part of the commentary that Kareem talks about in here is the fact that because our politicians aren't willing to discuss the race issue and deal with the problems that exist out there, that he's kind of giving kudos to Schultz for bringing it up at the grassroots level, that it's going to make a change. And he even says in there that, well, the discussion really needs to happen in the schools with the children versus it happening in Starbucks.
Well, this discussion happens at school, all right. It happens in the bathrooms where a kid ends up getting, beat down or dragged through the parking lot. It happens in school. The bottom line is, and I do agree with the changing, the part where Jabbar refers to, change can only come when people change their minds. I mean, that really is the bottom line. And again, I think he was saying two different things. In one, he was trying to give his real opinion, but at the same time, he was trying to do this with constant deference to Schultz, which I think only weakened his point. His point is well taken, and it's true. It can't be done. But trying to give Schultz this great amount of respect for raising the issue, I think, only weakened what he was really trying to say.
Yeah, and
which was point out the common sense that it's not going to work.
Yeah, and like I said, he talks about the conversation in the coffee shop because the politicians are trying to remove it out of the schools where it belongs, but the conversation in the schools isn't going to work. Really, history has shown that that's the case. You got to teach the truth, and that starts in the home with the kids.
Absolutely.
And are we perfect? No, but in this country, we're far better than a larger percentage of the rest of the world, and we can obviously do better, but the only thing that is really going to address the issue is the same thing that has always changed things for the better with regards to human relations, and that is the truth of God's word changing people's hearts. Paul says it clearly that he can have all kinds of gifts and everything, but if he doesn't have any love there, then he's empty. And I think when you talk about this particular situation with these people in the coffee shop, if they haven't got love behind it, what difference is it going to make?
Yeah, it's going to make a difference, but not the kind of difference Schultz thinks it's going to make. It's going to cause basically the equivalent of a coffee house brawl, you know?
Right.
They're going to be smashing each other over the head with bottles of amaretto syrup. So I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, seems pretty foolish to say the least that they're opening their mouths from this aspect. We'll be right back. Quick commercials here on Solomon on Blast. Here, Solomon on Blast in this free country of America. That was the Soviet national anthem, USSR anthem. And why would we play something like that leading into a good story?
You need to point out that was also the Red Army Choir.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just any edition.
It was the actual Red Army Choir playing that one. Wow. So Proverbs says, go from the presence of a foolish man when you do not perceive in him the lips of knowledge. Well, I think that's kind of the case here. Pretty foolish, and there's not a lot of knowledge when it comes to these students that had voted to celebrate communism at their prom in a school in New York or in New Mexico. These high school students, according to this article, decided that they were going to hold a communism themed prom. And they called it Promunism. Get it?
Wow. I think I get that one, Doug.
And the school administrators were actually considering that it might be okay to do that. This school, Cottonwood Classical Preparatory School, is a public charter school in Albuquerque whose students are in the International Baccalaureate program. In other words, supposedly, they're really, really smart. And their classmates had decided, they got together and decided that they were going to have a communism-based theme for their prom. Now, Fred, really, what do you do to set that up?
Now, I understand there was a lot of outrage over this. They got a lot of
heat,
negative feedback and heat. Yeah. But personally, Doug, I say it sounds like fun. I think they should go with it.
And what would be the rules behind it?
Well, you know, in other words, they can explore the whole communist experience. You know, they can just start from there, and they could use the prom, but maybe dedicate the entire week to the idea of living under a communist regime. You know, they can maybe establish a gulag for disorderly students. I noticed there was a girl in there who was a dissident who didn't like the idea. They can start with throwing her in the gulag. And, you know, they can just have fun with the whole experience, and maybe they can learn a little bit more about how communism really works and how it actually worked, I should say.
Now, would that mean that the school administrators get to set all the rules?
No, it's got to be a revolution from the proletariat. I think they have to eliminate the administrators, don't you think?
Oh, okay. So you know, the existing political structure has to be knocked off.
Yeah, absolutely. Like communism czar, would, you know, do. Maybe there's an Anastasia here and there that might escape. But by and large, they've got to overthrow the existing order and, you know, establish maybe the senior class president can assume a supreme authority over the entire, I'm not going to call it a student body. I should say a student proletariat.
Okay.
And in doing so, you know, he can purge all the people he never liked. In high school, there's always people you don't like.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
You could obviously, you got to have your clique. To surround you.
Purge them completely out of the picture.
I wonder who gets to participate in the KGB.
Absolutely. I'd get football players.
Oh,
secret police.
Obviously, yeah.
You know?
You want the big guys to...
You could get those guys to spy on the students and intimidate them into submission. And, you know, it sounds like fun, especially if you're on top, you know?
Yeah, always. That's always the case. Now what about the attire? Would they be allowed to wear whatever they want to the prom, or would there have to be like one or two specific outfits because, you know, you can't afford
to... This is where they have to kind of maybe borrow some ideas from Chinese communism. Remember the outfit that the Chinese wore?
The gray Chinese.
The Mao outfit that they wore up until a certain time where everything else was illegal? I think everybody should wear that style.
Okay. That way there's no...
And speaking of the China version... Another thing they can do, and I think this personally would have sounded like a lot of fun to be a part of promunism, would be to stage their own cultural revolution during the week. In other words, they can just beat up all the smart kids and give wedgies with impunity.
But according to this, they're all smart, right? So who gets to decide who's the smartest, I guess, in that situation?
Yeah, that's right. They are all so smart. It's pretty hard to figure that part out. But, like I said, you know, I don't know about getting all worked up about it. I think it's silly. I mean, you know, a lot of stuff is just plain silly. Here's one thing I would say, my honest critique about it is that the feedback loop has completed its circuit, and we know what's going on here. We know that in this environment, there are certain teachers that have spoon-fed these ideas to these kids, and these kids, and then they tell them how smart they are, and the kids believe it, and they simply regurgitate eventually what they've been told. And it's like you know, fourth graders with global warming. Uh-huh. You tell them and tell them and tell them, and they go home, and then they repeat it back to you at a, you know, on Earth Day when they do a play, and everyone gets emotional and teared up because these kids care so much about the environment.
And then you rat on your parents for throwing away the aluminum can when without recycling it, right?
That's right. But anyway, I think this is a good opportunity to revisit the Soviet national anthem and enjoy the voices of the Red Army Choir.
Well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did say that the conversation for race has to take place in the schools, so I guess that's the right place to have this conversation with regards to communism that start in the schools. And get the kids to understand it there.
That's right, comrade.
All right, we'll be back after these breaks with more Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I've got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
We're back. Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. What is going on here? Proverbs 10:18 says, whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. Well, in this article, seems like that seems to be the premise behind this particular person's view of religion. It says, the article is entitled Religious Trauma Syndrome, How Some Organized Religion Leads to Mental Health Problems. And in this article, the lady that writes it, Valerie Tarico, says that she, at 16, she began what would be a four-year struggle with bulimia. When the symptoms started, I turned in desperation to adults who knew more than I did about how to stop shameful behavior, my Bible study leader and a visiting youth minister. If you asked anything in faith believing, they said it will be done. I knew they were quoting the word of God. We prayed together and I went home confident that God had heard my prayers. But my horrible compulsions didn't go away. By the fall of my sophomore year in college, I was desperate and depressed enough I made a suicide attempt. The problem wasn't just the bulimia. I was convinced by then I was a complete spiritual failure. And the college counseling department offered to get her real help, which they later did. But to her mind, at that point, such help couldn't fix the problem. She was a failure in the eyes of God. And she said, it would be years before I understood that my inability to heal bulimia through the mechanisms offered by biblical Christianity was not a function of my own spiritual deficiency, but deficiencies in evangelical religion itself. So the question is it really religion that leads to all these mental health problems? She, in this article, she actually interviews a lady by the name of Dr. Marlene Winnell, who is a human development consultant in the San Francisco area. She's also the daughter of Pentecostal missionaries, and the focus of her work for the past 20 years has been to counsel men and women in recovering from various forms of fundamentalist religion, including the Assemblies of God denomination in which she was raised. So is this really the case? She interviews her and says, what exactly is religious trauma syndrome? And the doctor says, religious trauma syndrome is a set of symptoms and characteristics that tend to go together and which are related to harmful experience with religion. They are the result of two things: immersion in a controlling religion, and the secondary impact of leaving a religious group.
Well, speaking of fundamentalism, this sounds like fundamentalism in terms of Freud's teaching, in that they basically every real experience of faith is delusional. And so when you get to those fundamentals, you have two worldviews that are going to clash. And unfortunately, anybody with a negative experience, and I'm not minimizing what these people went through. I'm not automatically saying, you know, they got it wrong. I'm not saying that in their own experience, in their own struggle. Every man proclaims his own righteousness. There's another one of Solomon's statements.
Right.
It's the idea that you can run to another side that will tell you exactly what you want to hear, that will try to validate your contempt and disdain for your religious upbringing. And no one's going to question it. It's an orthodoxy. You're just going from one orthodoxy to another.
Right, that's it's a I'm different religion say. Here.
And fundamentally.
Yeah, fundamentally, it's the religion of her psychology that she's making the right religion, and these other people's religion, whether it be Christianity or whatever.
Well, I've seen it. I've worked with kids over the years, and you see a kid growing up at 16 that's really, you know, dedicated to church and everything, and they're way out there on the edge, and then you see that same kid 10 years later, and they've rejected that, but they've got the same religious mindset and imbalance. You know, now they're hugging trees, and it's the same thing. It's the same. They're just as religious as they've always been. They've only changed sides. That's the difference.
Right. It's which religion. Now, in this article, when she's interviewing this particular psychologist, every single one of the references to, quote, these bad religions has to do with a religion based on Christianity.
Absolutely.
There's never an indication that the problem exists in other religions as well.
I was sharing a line with you that I heard when I was flying. An actor, Steve Coogan, is playing a DJ, and he's training another DJ, and I can't remember the name of the exact situation, but he said something that I thought was refreshingly true. He said, never, ever criticize Muslims, Christians only, and sometimes Jews. So he's training this other DJ, and it's funny. And I thought, you know, at least that, they're honest about that. That's right. True. You can get Christians all day, every day in America. It's a standard. You can go after any kind of Christian you want to. And there's a, you know, there's a certain protocol that you have to follow.
Right. And all of these references in here, even though she'll say religious groups are highly controlling, teach fear about the world, and keep members sheltered and ill-equipped to function in society. Well, but then everything she references is always related to Christianity. There's never that same attack, like you said, against the Muslim faith, against Buddhism, against environmentalism, which is a religion in itself. So it leaves you a little bit concerned that does she have a real agenda here?
Oh, absolutely. These people are anti-Christian and fundamentally, and really anybody with some kind of serious-minded faith and devotion, what I call serious-minded devotion, someone who really goes to church regularly or goes to Bible studies or prioritizes their faith in the way they live, is going to be a suspect to these kinds of people. This person, they simply believe that that is unhealthy. And so, what is healthy to them? I'd like to know. I mean, you know, what prompted this girl to battle with bulimia at 16 years old?
According to her, and according to this article,
was it all religion that did that?
It was a religion. Now, maybe it was a distorted religion that was doing it. Maybe there was some of the aspects of that that had some kind of bearing on it. But I would almost say that it's more of a, like I said at the beginning, it's human nature. Human nature is flawed. There's people that are selfish, that we have all these problems.
Under every banner.
No matter where you go, there's always human nature at its base that is the real problem. And if you try and address human nature with man's solutions, then obviously you're not going to get a solution that's going to work. And that seems to be what they're doing here, is they're taking the approach that, well, all of your problems are caused by religion, not your human nature.
It's actually, on the face of it, just ridiculous. When you compare this woman's tiny, minute experience compared to all of Christian tradition, going back to, you know, Jesus walking the earth and, you know, being crucified and resurrected. It's ridiculous. The idea that you could even promote that beyond a point of absurdity is amazing. It only makes sense within certain milieus. And unfortunately, those people have a lot of expression in the media. The secular assumption is what they're working off of, as if it's already been decided that that's the way to view the world. And
that's where the solution is, the secular.
Secular, humanist, atheistic assumption that they're right and everyone else is wrong.
And that pretty much covers what she talks about in this article and the interview that she has. Although she, at one point, she did kind of make a reference to Mormons in here, which was still another aspect of Christianity, but that was the only one she ever came even close to denigrating besides the whole Christian religion. And she even references, we talked about that atheist congregation in London and the non-church. She even references that. Here's an example of how people are going to be better off without the religion. You can go to the church and not have religion.
Well, these people are obviously, I don't know how shall we say, they've been hurt, you know, and some now they're the experts. You know, I feel for people that have been hurt. We deal with them all the time. But turning that person's experience into now the expert point of view is just absurd.
Yeah, and she kind of tries to get away from that and around that by saying that mental health professionals have enough to do without looking for new pathology, and that she never set out looking for a niche topic, and certainly not religious trauma syndrome.
That's, America is always looking for a new market, and I don't care what level of society you're on here professionally.
Right.
America's always looking for a new market. That's patently untrue.
Yeah, you can be the expert in the field in that particular aspect of it, you've got a job for life there.
Now, what I wanted to move into and what we had discussed was an article in the Arizona Daily Star about 2 weeks ago or so. And the headline was really shocking. Tucson Ministry Occult Former Followers Say. And the article was written by Carol Ann Alimo and I guess another reporter, Emily Bregel. And basically what they did was...
Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and discuss that. We've got to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back with this last article, kind of a One Greater Than Solomon segment that needs to be discussed.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to all the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
We're back. Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. And like you were saying, Fred, just before the break there's a article that occurred a couple weeks, week and a half, 2 weeks ago in the Star. It's entitled Tucson Ministry, a Cult, Former Followers Say. Now, this particular article is labeled a Star investigation, so it's a pretty in-depth, at least in theory, article. And it was written by a couple different people, Carol Ann Alimo and Emily Bregel. And you were saying that she'd actually received some awards regarding her writing. Emily did?
Yeah, actually, I read her piece that she had written a couple years ago, four years ago, called Mom's Dark Spells Left Kids in House of Chaos. And actually, it was her own story. It was a gripping and award-winning piece, very gripping, and very difficult to read, but it was about growing up with a mentally ill mother. And it kind of gives you insight into the point of view that she's taking with this story. It's exactly like our previous one, the same kind of thinking, that there's a bunch of abused people out there that are struggling at the hands of some kind of religion. She made an interesting statement about the way she viewed her mother and growing up. She said, I spent most of my time judging her harshly for things I did not understand. And that's an amazing statement to make after her mother passed away. But, you know, I kind of feel that maybe she should take that yardstick and apply it to other areas as well. Maybe
she's not seeing the whole truth. And,
yeah, exactly. In other words, they see everything through this the prism that these poor, suffering people are being abused by religion.
The article says the University of Arizona is investigating a religious group that more than 20 former members and staffers describe as a cult. Faith Christian Church, which is led by a self-proclaimed former criminal, has operated on the U of A campus for 25 years. In the article, she says, it is initially welcoming, then slowly imposes control over most facets of members' lives, an Arizona Daily Star investigation found. Now, the Star interviewed 21 former employees and church members, most of them U of A alumni, and 9 of their parents. Their stories include reports of hitting infants with cardboard tubes to encourage submission, financial coercion, alienation from parents, public shaming of members, and shunning of those who leave the church or question its leaders. Some say that since leaving, they've spent years in therapy for panic attacks, depression, flashbacks, and other symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Now, there you go. I mean, some, that's a pretty broad term. That could mean two.
Two. Well,
you know, and here nowadays we're dealing with, I don't care what ministry you're dealing with. In fact, they will tell you that up to 25% of the American public are on some kind of medication, which means that the chances of dealing with somebody who's dealing with panic attacks and bulimia, it's exponential. I mean, anybody that now walks into any congregation or any body of people, I'm not even talking about religion. I'm talking about people that work at Walmart. The chances of Walmart having to deal with someone claiming panic attacks because of a certain supervisor, it's grown exponentially. There's so many people that are being treated in so many different ways.
Absolutely. And you see it in a lot of the workplaces nowadays that you've got to be lenient. You've got to be diverse in how you deal with people. And you can't judge people by their actual behavior anymore.
Now, my position here is to defend Faith Christian Church. But I will say one thing to be fair-minded about this. I've been a Christian a long time, and I am familiar with movements. I'm very familiar with the Jesus People movement. And I understand some of the things that happened during that time. One of them would have been in relationship to the Maranatha ministry. That was the base of this, you know, the shepherding movement. And there were some excesses in that. I can understand why people would be offended by that. I get all that. But to say that all of this equals, that the Star can put on the front page, this church is unequivocally, well, they
a cult.
A cult. You know, I will say this much. Cult is the N-word of evangelical Christians. Anytime you want to come against a group of believers and you're upset with them or you have contempt for them, you just employ this word and you can get away with it. It's really a slur is what it is. And it's amazing that the Arizona Daily Star would put this on the front page of their Sunday edition. It's astonishing to me that maybe they want to use the word somewhere in the middle of the article. The person said, but to put it on the headline, it was an attempt to destroy this ministry.
And given the fact that this ministry has been in Tucson 25, almost 30 years, and they were able to find a total of 21 employees and members and 9 of their parents. So a total of 30 people over a 25 to 30 year period.
Like one per year.
Yeah.
Fundamentally.
And I would say that in most cases, the people that were coming into these churches, into the church itself, aren't probably people that have everything figured out and working in their lives.
As in anywhere, any church. You know,
that's the whole point of the church is to fix those that are broken.
Again, the anti-religious bent is just apparent all throughout the article. She refers to Pastor Hall, she says, is led by a self-proclaimed former criminal. Now, does she have any understanding of the whole born-again movement at all?
Most likely not.
You know, the evangelical movement, whether it's Pentecostal or Baptist or anything in between, is all based on the born-again experience. The conversion is defined right by being born again. Billy Graham wrote a book called Born Again, and so did Charles Colson, along the lines of that subject. The idea that you come from an old life to a new life. Now, she's framing this as if this guy is Elmer Gantry, and he just showed up, and he's running a new scam. That's right. How that's framed.
Yes.
And I have to ask myself, did she do that deliberately? Or is she just that ignorant of evangelical Protestant religion? I'm wondering. I mean,
I would say a little bit of both, because in the article she talks about the fact that they actually attended one of the services and they almost make it out to be kind of a mockery of the fact that when they went to the service that people had their hands lifted up and singing and their eyes closed, almost like, you know, they were in some kind of under mind control.
I mean, America is fundamentally a religious country. I mean, what do these people think? And like I said earlier, This really is based on a secular, humanist, atheistic assumption that anyone doing that is suspect. They refer to UA's religious council, website, and how this church doesn't measure up. And so I went there. And basically what the University Religious Council does is link it to another website called Let Us Reason Ministry, run by a guy named Mike Oppenheimer, who actually would be very much the kind of person they probably wouldn't appreciate. On this website, he also warns about Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Rick Warren, and John Osteen. You know, and so something tells me she may have no respect for those people, but something tells me the Arizona Daily Star would not want to take them on. In fact, the Mormon Church might own part of the Arizona Daily Star, for all I know.
Right.
So they basically look for soft targets, what they think are soft targets.
Well,
and they go after those.
Yeah, and in any situation, and having been involved in taking self-defense training classes and actually teaching them as a firearms instructor, the key piece is you don't make yourself into a soft target. You don't make yourself look like an easy target to the criminal or whoever, the bully that's going to come and attack you. You stand up, you have that view that you understand what's going on around you, and you're aware, you're alert to what the attacks may be, and that criminal, who is usually a coward, a bully, looking for the easy target, is going to avoid you. And I think that's where, at times, we as Christians need to have that attitude that we're not going to walk around in, you know, it's not Jesus meek and mild, too scared to say anything, that we have to stand up to these kind of people and make the claim that, yeah, there's human nature, like I said at the beginning, is what it is, but that doesn't, human nature doesn't make the belief system of Christianity wrong. And that's what they're really trying to say.
Right. And, you know, another thing that she does is she quotes a mother by the name of, it's in the article, Kathy Sullivan's son. So she tells this tale how this junior joins the church and loses his personality. I mean, that's a massive red flag right there. You know, I became a born-again Christian as a teenager. And I tell you, my parents were nominally Catholic. They were college-educated professionals. They were concerned because it was so different than anything they knew. But they were wise enough to respect my personal development. And our relationship in the long run was fantastic. My children and all the other grandchildren absolutely loved them. And it worked itself out, in other words. But the idea that a mother would violently oppose her son and humiliate him like that, there's nothing positive about that. You know, I have an observation, and that is, I don't know how much this lady owns, but only rich kids get brainwashed into cults. To everyone else, they're just going to church now. You know, and it's a mentality, in other words. They hire somebody to violently, try to affect the decision-making of their children, and unfortunately, that scene's not going to end good. I'm making a prediction that's not going to end good.
Yeah,
but can I just say this as we end? Very clear in this article, at least this came out, that Dan Busby, president of the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability, endorsed the church, and so did Dave Drum, who's actively involved in the Ministers Alliance in Tucson. Neither one of those, and those are very, very important voices in support of Steve Hall and Faith Christian Church.
Yeah, and I think that is the big part of it, that the Evangelical Council researches these. They have to provide information to the public on their finances and everything, and they were willing to do that. Just because, according to this lady, they weren't willing to talk to her makes it all a cult. And
absolutely,
I think in reality, it's kind of disingenuous.
Well, one last thought. There's lots of evangelical campus ministries, Navigators Campus Crusade for Christ, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, Chi Alpha Baptist Student Union, and others, and they employ
same tactics.
Very same strategies.
Yeah. And that is it. Go find the lost.
Characterize those as some, you know, bizarre thing is wrong.
Okay, until next week, keep thinking wisely, and Jake will be up next with Jake Feinberg Show.